And a very good morning to you. How are you doing? It's Sunday morning, April 5th, 2020. It is the BBG, not the BBC. Richie Allen with you, live from Salford in Greater Manchester. Hope you're having a good weekend. The lockdown continues. The weather is quite lovely in many parts of the UK. A little bit overcast in Salford this morning, although it might brighten up a bit later on. You cannot tweet the programme today because my Twitter account has been suspended. I will briefly tell you why in a minute. It's no big deal. I am no martyr. They're not out to get me. Not playing that truth or industrial complex game. They've suspended my Twitter account because I did my own take on the Trainspotting opening salvo of Choose Life, basically. Get out, be free, spend time outdoors. Somebody didn't like that. And my account has been suspended, so you can't tweet the programme. Tough shit, Paddy. Right, let's get on with it then. Let's have a chat, let's look through the papers and listen to the UK's mid-morning talk shows as well.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, so you can't tweet the program today, sadly. You'll just have to listen to me. It'll be a one-way conversation today. Right. I don't know when the Twitter account... I'll turn this off. I don't know when the Twitter thing will be back. A lot of people took exception to a tweet that I published. And I'll read it to you. Pretty benign, really. By my standards. My tweet read, "Don't stay at home, get out, have barbecues, have parties, walk your dog as often as you like, go back to work, open the pubs, choose life, congregate, assemble, be like the Swedes. It's a hoax. We're not at war. Hashtag coronavirus hoax." That was it. And it went a bit viral. It had a few thousand likes and it had nearly 1,000 retweets and it had about 100,000 impressions, people who'd seen it. And a lot of people were complaining about it. I got trolled a little bit. Not that it bothers me, I couldn't care less. I have skin that's so thick, it's well, there isn't any instrument made by man to measure how thick my skin is. Couldn't care less. You think that would be enough, but no. Twitter removed it, suspended my account, and said that they'd restore my account if I agree to delete the tweet. And I said, no, I won't delete the tweet. You can close the account, you can do whatever you want. I couldn't care less. So that's where we are. I'm not going to dwell on that because we know what Twitter, what Facebook, Instagram, and ultimately what Google, we know what it is. We know what it is, what it is now, what it has become, what it was always meant to be. So that's why I won't be reading your tweets this morning. All right? All right. 3 minutes past 11. Straight into it then. The hills are alive. Well, they might be later on. Spring has sprung. You might see more people outdoors later on. I don't know. We'll see. The front pages of the newspapers, the Sunday Telegraph. There is a lot of coverage of the Queen on the front pages of the UK newspapers today because the Queen will address the nation on Sunday evening, apparently, to rally the people. The beleaguered plebs, God love them, confined to their houses. We're going to get a rallying cry from the Queen later on. So, big picture of the Queen on the Sunday Telegraph, along with some words from her address because it was recorded and it was leaked out. "Those who come after us will say that the Britons of this generation were as strong as any," according to the Queen. Also on the front page of the Telegraph, the Sunday Telegraph today, and this is very important, this headline, "Tech giants urged to halt 5G conspiracy theories. Tech giants urged to halt 5G conspiracy theories." Now, it has been some time since the establishment has gotten its knickers in a twist about a certain alleged conspiracy theory. And boy, has the establishment gotten its knickers in a proper twist about this. They're really coming out of the woodwork today to pour water on the notion that 5G technology has any part in what we've been seeing in recent weeks, the virus and all the rest of it. They've really gone in hard on this notion. they have. Tech giants are facing calls from ministers to halt the spread of crazed conspiracy theories. That's a quote about 5G. After mobile phone masts were set alight and telecoms engineers abused by people peddling nonsense, linking the digital technology to the COVID-19 outbreak. And Michael Gove, Cabinet Office Minister, was briefing the country yesterday alongside Professor Stephen Cowis. And Michael Gove described the theories about 5G and the spread of COVID as dangerous nonsense. In fact, you can hear a little bit of Michael Gove followed by NHS England Professor Stephen Powis right here.
The story somehow got about that they play a role in the spread of the disease. That's just nonsense. Dangerous nonsense as well. And I'm hand over to Steve to say a little bit more about the vital importance of knocking down this rubbish. Yes.
So the 5G story is complete and utter rubbish. It's nonsense. It's the worst kind of fake news. The reality is that the mobile phone networks are absolutely critical to all of us, particularly in a time when we are asking people to stay at home and to not see relatives and friends. But in particular, those are also the phone networks that are used by our emergency services and our health workers. And I'm absolutely outraged, absolutely disgusted that people would be taking action against the very infrastructure that we need to respond to this health emergency. It is absolute and utter rubbish, and I can't condemn it in stronger terms than that.
It's absolutely rubbish, says Professor Stephen Powis. Now, I have some opinions on burning infrastructure and masts, but I'm not going to share those opinions with you today. I've never censored myself in my life, and I'm not censoring myself now. But there are rules, in fact, there are very strong laws in this country about incitement. So I have nothing to say. I'm not in the habit of burning or attacking or vandalising anything, no matter what it is. And I have opinions on news that people are destroying 5G masts, but I'm going to reserve those opinions and keep them for myself for now. Okay? So that was Michael Gove. Now, a bit later on this hour, we're going to come back to 5G and coronavirus again. I would urge you, if you're listening to this now, don't miss it. Stay with me. I know you do anyway. Stay with me. Alert your friends and alert your neighbours. Because I'm going to be talking about this later on, and I'm going to be using some official documentation to talk about what 5G technology, what non-ionising radiation, RF EMF, what that sort of stuff can do to the human body. It's very important. So I'm going to come back to the government's attack on so-called conspiracy theories. And the government is saying to technological firms and to the big carriers, the big social media networks, you need to get rid of people. Ban them, get rid of them if they are sharing these theories about 5G. So we'll come back to that. Sunday Express, yet again, front page picture of Queenie. And the headline is, a generation that's as strong as any. The Mail on Sunday, Queen's rousing message. Sunday Times, Queen calls on nations to be strong as virus strikes medics. The Sunday Mirror's Alison Phillips is delighted, absolutely thrilled that the Queen is rallying the nation. Apparently, this will be only the fifth time of the Queen's, in the Queen's reign, the fifth time that she has felt compelled to take to the television screens and speak directly to the unwashed, ergo you and me. Alison Phillips on The Mar Show.
There's some idea in the papers that she was perhaps thinking about doing this next weekend, on Easter weekend, but that it was felt that it would be bad to leave it too late, as we know that that's the criticism made of her following the death of Diana. And so she decided to make this address, which was filmed in extraordinary circumstances with just one cameraman in there who was dressed in latex gloves and a mask. Just
they got the gimp. They got the gimp out from the cellar to go and film the Queen, apparently. this amused me. But then I have a warped sense of humour.
In there, who was dressed in latex gloves and a mask just to protect her from infection.
Lovely.
But the words are marvellous. I mean, the words are really ones that...
Marvellous, darling.
And obviously the Queen, having lived through war in a way that, you know, very few people in this country have, is able to use those words with such force when she says that other generations will hopefully look back at this generation and think that the attributes of self-discipline, of quiet good humoured resolve and a fellow feeling still characterise this country. I think it's going to be a very powerful moment.
Powerful. It's going to be powerful tonight. I can't wait. Powerful television. Can't wait. I'll be watching Ozark on Netflix, season 3, around about the time that crazy, batshit, blue-rinse bastard is addressing the nation. Right. Sunday People, care home time bomb. Very good story. MPs are angry, apparently, after 13 people died in 1 week at a particular care home. The Sunday People says a shortage of equipment, testing and staff is hurting older people. I have no doubt that it is. Sunday Mirror, coronavirus vultures. Rees Mogg firm, our chance to make money. The Sunday Mirror is going after Jacob Rees-Mogg this morning. Terminological inexactitude, darling. They're basically saying that a company he has a stake in, 15%, a company called Somerset Capital Management, is thrilled about the crisis and sees it as a once-in-a-generation chance for investors. So Mogg is getting it this morning. Right, the Health Secretary then is Matt Hancock. The Health Secretary, he's been on Sophie Ridge and Andrew Marr. I recorded him speaking with Sophie Ridge as the UK braces itself for the prospect that the young and the carefree will go out and grab a bit of sunshine today. What are the rules? This is important now. What are the rules, Health Secretary? For the love of God, man, what are the rules?
We're crystal clear in the guidance of what people should and shouldn't do. That guidance is backed up in law. It is not a request. It is a requirement in law, and people need to follow it. And I just say this to the very small minority, as you say, of people who are choosing to flout the guidance. You are putting others' lives at risk, and you are putting yourself in harm's way. And so we are very, very clear about that guidance.
And so does that mean, just to be crystal clear, that sunbathing is against the law?
Sunbathing is against the rules that have been set out for important public health reasons.
The lazy sunbathers. You can't sunbathe today. Get in! Get in. What else?
I wish I didn't have to say this.
Give me a break.
But I do, because the whole country wants to come through this crisis. The whole country wants to come through this, of course, as quickly as possible. And the fastest way to come through the guidance, the crisis, and to save lives, and to protect the NHS and reduce the pressure on the NHS, the fastest way to do that is to follow the guidance and to stay at home unless you've got one of the four reasons that we've set out.
The guidance, the rules, the guidance, the rules, guidance. What about the law, though? Much of this is unenforceable through the law, through the legal system. Keep that in mind. So he's asked by Sophie Ridge, when will the lockdown end? That's the $64 million question. When will it end?
The first thing we have to do is flatten the curve. Turn the curve of infections downwards. We have seen some progress on that, but we're not there yet. Then once we've done that, we'll be able to think about the next steps, and we're doing the work on that, but we'll be able to set
what
that
are
out.
What are those next steps? Because this is the critical thing.
What are those next steps, says Sophie Ridge? Ridge, of course, should say, what are those next steps? And like the little blonde journalist, or alleged journalist that she is, the little presenter, shut up. What are the next steps? Shut up. But this is what journalism has been reduced to. You see, there's a bit of flirtation going on between Matt Hancock and Sophie Ridge. Not the sexual type of flirtation. There's a little play going on there. Ridge and Gove between them must prepare you for what's coming. They must coax you, kind of program you into the next step, which is the vaccine that might be mandatory, very well maybe mandatory. And rather than just say, what are the next steps? Ridge says, what are the next steps? And?
What are the next steps? Is it a vaccine? Is it treatment? Is it testing?
Yeah.
What is the way out?
So it's a multiple choice answer, health secretary. Is it vaccines? Is it more treatment? Is it staying in?
Well, we're working on all of those three, and they're all very important. Treatments to make sure that if we can improve the treatments, and if we can get the science behind the treatments better, then more people who become ill will be able to survive, and people will be less ill. A vaccine, of course, would be really, it would be incredible, but it has to be safe and not do more harm than good.
What did you just say there, Health Secretary, about the vaccine?
Of course, would be really, it would be incredible, but it has to be safe and not do more harm than good.
But I thought vaccines were safe. I thought vaccines were great. That everybody should have them for the flu and for the measles and everything. Why are you introducing the notion that they have to be proven to be safe and not do more harm than good? I don't understand that.
To survive, and people will be less ill. A vaccine, of course, would be really, it would be incredible.
Of course.
Incredible, but it has to be safe and not do more harm than good. It takes time to develop a vaccine like that. But in fact, the UK has put more funding into...
Yeah. He goes on to say the UK has put more money into the search for a vaccine than anybody else. Very interesting he chose that language. Vaccine will be incredible, of course, but it can't do more harm than good. He went on to talk about getting to 100,000 tests a day really soon. They want to test people. Not just workers who deal with the public, not just NHS workers. They want everybody, ultimately, in the country to be tested for the virus. Amazing, right? He said that by the end of April, they'd reach 100,000 tests a day. Will he hit that target?
Yes, it's going to be hard, and it's going to require an awful lot of people to put their shoulders to the wheel in the life sciences industry, across the NHS, supported by the work that Public Health England has been doing brilliantly on the expanding testing. We set a goal of 10,000 tests a day by the end of March, and we hit that goal. At the end of February, we had under 2,000 tests a day. So we are on a very rapid ramp up, but we clearly need to see that go further.
I mean, testing, of course, is crucial to get NHS staff back onto the front line. And I think there is still a bit of confusion about just how many NHS staff are currently...
How does she know that testing is crucial? How does she know? She's supposed to be a presenter, not a doctor or a scientist. How does she know it's crucial?
Staff are currently off because... of suspected coronavirus.
Yeah, I won't put any more of that on you. She goes on to ask him how many NHS staff are off with the virus. About 8% apparently at the moment. 19 minutes past 11. This is Sunday View with me, Richie Allen, live from Salford in Greater Manchester. As for the police today, heavy-handedness. You know, former Brexit Secretary David Davis has likened some police officers to little Hitlers in an article in the Mail on Sunday. We all know what Peter Hitchens of the Mail on Sunday has been saying about policing and Orwellian stuff and all of that. Here's the BBC Health editor Hugh Pym on policing the lockdown this weekend. And he talks about an interesting incident which happened on Brighton Beach yesterday.
Yes, there was a scene that we saw on our screens last night in the news of a couple of people having a barbecue on Brighton Beach, and it looked like the police coming over and stopping them and pushing over the barbecue. Now, a lot of people would have sympathy with the police there because it seems pretty clear that you were told you could go out for a bit of exercise but not sort of hang around in that sort of way. It's a very delicate balance. I mean, the police feel they're doing their bit in terms of their role for society to advise, to advise people, look, why are you doing this? Probably not a very good idea, but it's a very delicate balance, isn't it?
Certainly is. Delicate balance. It's a tyranny if police officers are turning over people's barbecue. If two people are on their own on a beach with a little bit of a barbecue and a police officer comes along tells them to go home or they'll be arrested, and tips over the barbecue, you're living in a fascist police state. It's as simple as that. 20 minutes past the hour. Will I take a tune? There's so much to get through today. And of course, I can't read your comments, sadly. We'll take a tune in a minute. Let's hear from Professor Neil Ferguson of Imperial College. He's the man most responsible for the lockdown. Number 10 Downing Street, Boris Johnson, the UK government, they are doing what Professor Neil Ferguson recommends. They are. But he isn't happy at being labelled Professor Lockdown in the press. And he isn't happy. And he's backtracking a bit. Here's Neil Ferguson.
We produced scientific evidence along with a lot of other scientific groups across the country which fed into government policy, but we did not determine that policy. There are a number of balancing acts involved in doing that. I'm very well aware of the economic impact of this current policy, and we would all like these measures to be able to be relaxed as soon as possible. I can't answer the question directly because when the lockdown ends will depend really on what happens to this epidemic. As I said at the beginning, how quickly case numbers decline. There is no point to having gone through this effort and releasing a lockdown at a point where case numbers are still high and then will resurge even faster than we've seen before. We want case numbers to get to a low point where we can start substituting other measures for the most intrusive and economically costly aspects of the current lockdown. And almost certainly those additional measures will involve massively ramped up testing, going back to trying to identify contacts of cases and stopping chains of transmission. That can only really feasibly be done when we have many fewer cases per day than we have at the moment.
Listen to Andrew Marr's question.
One of the other government advisers talked about the danger of us painting ourselves into a corner with all of this. And I suppose the real question is, how do we end the lockdown bit by bit? Does it happen perhaps at different speeds in different geographical areas? Does it happen to different cohorts? So the most vulnerable people, the older, more vulnerable people, stay locked down for longer. And to what extent can we hope that people who have had the coronavirus and have become immune, if they have become immune, can then be given some kind of certificates or wristbands or whatever and be let out earlier?
This is disgraceful, this, what Andrew Marr says here. Listen carefully to Marr's question about one of the other government advisers.
One of the other government advisers talked about the danger of us painting ourselves into a corner with all of this. And I suppose the real question is how...
And then he moves on. One of the other government advisers says that there's a danger we can paint ourselves into a corner around all of this. But of course, he didn't say just that. He's talking there about a guy called Professor Graham Medley, who's the government's chief pandemic modeller. And he's been warning. He has been warning that the having no clear exit strategy and by keeping the lockdown going on is going to have a profoundly negative effect on the mental health and well-being of people in general. And that ultimately, you might be better off letting people out. So some people will get the virus, and most people will get it, and they won't be inadvertently affected by it, not really. They will get through it, and then you will kind of build up an immunity to it. That's what he is saying. And he's being very clear about that. He says unemployment, domestic violence and mental ill health are mounting indefinitely. And maybe the best thing to do now would be to allow people to just catch this bloody virus and be done with it. And that is what he is saying, Professor Graham Medley. But Andrew Marr tossed it off as to Neil Ferguson from Imperial College. Oh, well, another government advisor is saying we might paint ourselves into a corner. No, he's clearly saying that the lockdown should end. The BBC is a fucking disgrace. That's what it is. So he doesn't put that to Ferguson, who is responsible for the lockdown. Doesn't put that to him at all. And there you are, 24 minutes past the hour. But then, I don't think you're exactly fainting now in surprise that a BBC presenter gives a fleeting mention to another government advisor but doesn't actually explain what it is that the other government advisor is recommending. It's dreadful, isn't it? Spare a thought for me. This is the shit I have to wade through day in, day out. Let's have a tune. Why not? Here's Finlay Quaye on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Sunday View from Salford. Ah, be Jesus, eh? To the rescue, Monday shining on Sunday View, Europe's most listened to independent radio show. This is the Richie Allen Show. And the brilliantly intelligent Jean-Anne Crowley has picked up on what happened on the BBC today. I'm going to reiterate this. I know you're not stupid. I know you heard me loud and clear. Andrew Marr interviewed Neil Ferguson. You heard him. He's the guy responsible for the lockdown. Marr said to him, there's another government advisor saying that we shouldn't paint ourselves into a corner. And Marr moved on. He was referring to Professor Graham Medley, who is basically saying the lockdown is doing more harm than good and needs to be ended. And this is why I've said to you before, and it's a phrase, I mean, I'm nobody important, but I used the phrase a few years ago and it kind of caught on. The BBC represents a clear and present danger to your health and to your well-being. Why isn't BBC One, why isn't Andrew Marr, or why isn't Sophie Ridge interviewing Professor Graham Medley this morning? There is more chance of you winning the national lottery today, on a day when it doesn't take place, than there is of Graham Medley being invited on to the national media. He is a professor of equal standing with Neil Ferguson, but he's saying the lockdown is deadly. It's no good. Therefore, you must not invite him onto any of the mid-morning talk shows, and you must never hear what he has to say. It's a fucking tyranny that you live in. It is anti-journalism. It is disgusting. I couldn't live with myself if I was producing the Andrew Marr show. I would resign. I would put myself on the fucking street in poverty rather than take the check on fucking Friday. Here's your wages. No! No! No, I won't take the money and lie to the nation. I won't do it. It's sickening to me to have to fucking do this every day. And the cretins that live on social media, which is most people in the UK. Most people fucking live on social media. Where do you live? 27 Francis Avenue. No, you don't. You live on Twitter, you fucktard. You sleep in your house, but you live on Twitter. Oh, the government is right. They're only doing what needs doing. The NHS is looking after us. No! They're giving you one side of it. They are bombarding you with propaganda morning, noon and night. Bombarding you. It's getting into the inner recesses of your soul. Terrifying you. Putting people on TV with letters after their name. Academics. And at the same time, marginalising equally qualified men and women from the same fucking institutions who are saying this is terribly wrong. They want £150 a year, do they, for that shit? No chance. No chance. It's never contrived with me. I lose my temper. I can't bear this. It is slowly driving me insane. Medley is out there saying the lockdown is killing people. It's not really going to do any good. It's wrecking the economy. But he can't be seen or heard today. No. No, because the BBC is in cahoots with that entity, whatever it is that's really behind all of this. BBC is the propaganda arm of it. The propaganda wing of the elite, whatever that is. This is Sunday View. Lots more to come about 5G and the coronavirus. I've got some food for thought for you coming up in a few minutes' time.
Thanks to you, The Richie Allen Show is the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. Show your support for this unique broadcaster by making a regular financial contribution. Just the price of a cup of coffee each month will make a massive difference. Visit richieallen.co.uk for details.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
I bet you the Queen shops at markbajerski.com. I bet you the Queen. That's why the fucker is still alive. Welcome back.
The Richie Allen Show is live and interactive. All episodes are archived on Podomatic, Spotify, iTunes, and YouTube. For more details, go to richieallen.co.uk.
Now, an extraordinary video has emerged. It emerged yesterday, but I think it's been online a few days. It was made by a New York-based doctor called Cameron Kyle Seidel. We would say Siddle or Seidel, wouldn't we, here? Cameron Kyle Seidel. He's an ER and critical care doctor. And on his YouTube channel, he says he is baffled at what he is seeing in his critical care patients. The ones with coronavirus. Now, you have to listen to this very carefully, right? I'm not going to do any editorialising on this because I only saw this last night before I went to bed. And Jean-Anne sent me an email this morning saying, here's this video of this doctor, you might want to look at it. And a number of other people as well have been talking about it. I think what he says in the video is fairly extraordinary, and I'm not going to over-egg this pudding. Just listen. So again, Cameron Kyle Seidel, an ER and critical care doctor working in New York City. And he explains himself, in his own words, what he is seeing in his patients. And I think everybody really needs to hear this. Cameron Kyle Seidel.
This is Dr. Cameron Kyle Seidel, ER and critical care doctor from New York City. 9 days ago, I opened an intensive care unit to care for the sickest COVID-positive patients in this city. In these 9 days, I have seen things I have never seen before. In treating these patients, I have witnessed medical phenomena that just don't make sense in the context of treating a disease that is supposed to be a viral pneumonia. 9 days ago, I presumed I was opening an intensive care unit to treat patients with a virus causing a pneumonia that was ravaging lungs across the world, starting out as something mild, a cough, a sore throat, and progressively increasing in severity until ultimately ending in something called acute respiratory distress syndrome, or ARDS. This is the paradigm that every hospital in the country is working under. This is the disease, ARDS, that every hospital is preparing to treat. And this is the disease, ARDS, for which in the next 2 to 6 weeks, 100,000 Americans might be put on a ventilator. And yet, everything I've seen in the last 9 days, all the things that just don't make sense, the patients I'm seeing in front of me, the lungs I'm trying to improve, have led me to believe that COVID-19 is not this disease, and that we are operating under a medical paradigm that is untrue. In short, I believe we are treating the wrong disease, and I fear that this misguided treatment will lead to a tremendous amount of harm to a great number of people in a very short time.
That's absolutely staggering, right? He goes on.
As New York City appears to be about 10 days ahead of the country, I feel compelled to get this information out. COVID-19 lung disease, as far as I can see, is not a pneumonia and should not be treated as one. Rather, it appears as some kind of viral-induced disease, most resembling high-altitude sickness.
Right? We're told by NHS England that it isn't the flu. It's a terrible virus. It's very contagious. And when it progresses, it basically gives you double pneumonia. That's what they say it does, and it is. They've been emphatic about describing it as pneumonia. That's what it leads to. COVID-19, coronavirus. And he says no.
As far as I can see, is not a pneumonia and should not be treated as one. Rather, it appears as some kind of viral-induced disease, most resembling high-altitude sickness. It is as if tens of thousands of my fellow New Yorkers are on a plane at 30,000 feet and the cabin pressure is slowly being let out.
My God, it looks like altitude sickness, and he describes people being in a plane and the oxygen being left out of the plane. That's what he's seeing in his patients. Now keep that in mind. I'm going to talk in a minute about what happened to me back in February.
These patients are slowly being starved of oxygen. I have seen patients dependent on oxygen take off their oxygen and quickly progress through a state of anxiety and emotional distress and eventually get blue in the face. And while they look like patients absolutely on the brink of death, they do not look like patients dying of pneumonia. I have never been a mountain climber, and I do not know the conditions at base camp below the highest peaks in the world.
They're ripping their masks off. People that are apparently oxygen starved are ripping the masks off their face. This was chilling for me to listen to yesterday, and chilling to listen to again this morning. I'll explain why in a minute.
But I suspect that the patients I'm seeing in front of me look most like as if a person was dropped off on the top of Mount Everest.
Jesus.
Without time to acclimate.
Wow.
I don't know the final answer of this disease, but I'm quite sure that a ventilator is not it. That is not to say that we don't need ventilators. We absolutely need them. They are the only way at this time that we are able to give a little more oxygen to patients who need it. But when we treat people with ARDS, we typically use ventilators to treat what's called respiratory failure. That is, we use the ventilator to do the work that the patient's muscles can no longer do because they're too tired to do it. These patients' muscles work fine. I fear that if we're using a false paradigm to treat a new disease, that the method that we program the ventilator, one based on a notion of respiratory failure as opposed to oxygen failure, that this method, and there are a great many number of methods we can use with the ventilator, but this method being widely adopted at this very moment in every hospital in the country, which aims to increase pressure on the lungs in order to open them up, is actually doing more harm than good.
My God. My God. He's seeing people with symptoms that resemble altitude sickness, people whose lungs are under extraordinary pressure, people who can't get the air into their lungs, but not because they have pneumonia. I'm going to be very brief with this. I didn't say a lot about it when I came back after being away for a few weeks. First of all, if you've never heard me before, I'm an incredibly fit and healthy bloke. I weigh around 13 stone 12 pounds. I'm 6.5 foot tall. I'm very tall. And I have been for some years running 5 to 6 kilometres at least 4 to 5 times a week. Listen, forget that. I don't want to hear it about it's too much, Richie. We can have that argument another day about it being too much. I'm in exceptional physical condition for a 45-year-old guy. I'm unbelievably fit. Right, okay. I have adult asthma, developed as an adult. Allergies trigger it. And I wouldn't very often use salbutamol, the blue inhaler. I wouldn't use it very often because I'm not very often out of breath. You know, I go running and I come back and I wouldn't use the inhaler. But every now and then, an allergy will trigger it and I would find breathing difficult and the salbutamol-based inhaler would relieve it. Yes, I've had pneumonia in the past. I was very sick. This time in 2019, I had a really bad infection in my lungs, got over it. I'm generally very healthy. This February gone, out of the blue, I found myself one evening, I just come off the Richie Allen radio show, unable to breathe. Obviously some air was getting in, otherwise I would have died. But it was very difficult to breathe. It was like breathing through a straw. Being submerged. And a straw poking out of your mouth and breaching the waterline. It was horrendous. Future Mrs. Allen oft mentioned was very worried. What's going on? I don't know. And it didn't let up. Eased off a little bit. Following day, not so bad in the morning. Got worse again in the evening. This progressed. I took a few days off the Richie Allen radio show. Foolishly came back. And then it got worse again. Went to the doctor. The doctor was baffled. Hadn't a clue. I can see that you're in some distress, but there doesn't appear to be any, wait for it, any mucus or any fluid. Which is very strange. Because I thought what would happen is, because when I get these infections, initially it's very difficult to breathe and it's problematic. But as the body begins to fight back, mucus, phlegm, as we would say, becomes apparent that you've got phlegm. It begins to loosen. You bring it up. Excuse me talking about this while you're having your brunch or breakfast or lunch or whatever. And then you get better. But there was nothing. There was no mucus on my lungs. My lungs were clear. They hadn't a clue. And it was getting progressively worse day in, day out. Horrendous. Here, take some steroids. Here's a steroid inhaler. Have that. And listening back to what this guy is saying, this ER critical care doctor, this altitude sickness, this pressure on the lungs, but no pneumonia being present, rang a massive load of bells in my mind yesterday. And I thought, that's pretty much what was going on with me in February. Horrendous. Waiting for it to break so that I would start bringing up some sputum or whatever. But there was none there. But I couldn't breathe. It wasn't an allergic reaction to anything. So what the fuck was it? Well, the doctors I saw here hadn't a clue. They certainly didn't diagnose it as coronavirus. Not in February. They had nothing to say about it other than, well, look, take this and good luck, basically. Right? So, what he's been describing, because I'm still a very young, very, very fit man, did I have some of that which he has seen in his patients, and did I navigate that and get over it? I have no idea. But that made a lot of sense to me. So what else does he say about this thing that he's never seen before? Keep that in mind. What else does he say?
I'm confident that if those of us that work bedside with these patients, those of us who are witnessing the things that we have never seen before, despite the many years we have worked and the thousands of patients and diseases we have seen, if we can effectively communicate this to all those that are so important but who are not bedside, the researchers, the administrators, those who procure our resources and make our protocols, the politicians, our own governments, if we are able to convince them that this is a disease that is different than anything we have ever seen, I am confident that an answer can be found, that effective treatments can be discovered, and that a plan to disseminate that treatment can be rapidly deployed, and that tens of thousands and probably hundreds of thousands of lives and lungs will be protected. The time for this is now. We are staring into a future in which a great many of our fellow Americans are going to suffer. We are all involved in this future. So I urge you, for those of us, if you are out there, for those who work bedside, I urge you to speak up. We can change this. I thank you all for listening. Please spread the message and stay safe.
And stay safe. That was Dr. Cameron Kyle Seidel, New York City critical care doctor, an ER doctor, saying that the ventilators were given people who are acutely unwell, who are really unwell. The ventilators are going to kill them. It's not going to do them any good. Because I'm not seeing pneumonia. I'm seeing something very new that I've never seen before. Something akin to altitude sickness. Something that is attacking the lungs, making it difficult towards impossible for people to breathe properly. And of course, if you have underlying medical conditions and you are weak anyway, this is going to fucking kill you. And he's appealing for other doctors to come forward and say, stop ventilating these people because you're going to kill them. So what could that be then? Well, this is, of course, where the Truther Industrial Complex comes in and makes all sorts of claims without a shred of evidence to support those claims, for the most part, I must say. Can't say everybody. Oh, it's a biological weapon. It was dropped on us by the Chinese. Or it was dropped on us by, I don't know, the Russians maybe. Or maybe we dropped it on ourselves. Biological warfare developed in a lab, dropped on us, say some people. No evidence to support any of that. Now others are saying that they believe that the introduction of the fifth generation communication network and the transmitters needed to roll that out are somehow related to what we have been seeing and hearing around the virus. Now I would dismiss those notions as fanciful if the ideas, or if the notions weren't coming from people that I believe have a good track record in research, and also if they weren't coming from people that I know to be qualified in the field of non-ionizing radiation. So I've kind of muddled that up there. I'd normally just say, ah, look, 5G and the virus, nah. It's a bit silly that, I don't know. But there are people whom I have a lot of respect for giving me a moment to pause. Is there any truth in it? We heard Michael Gove, Cabinet Secretary, yesterday briefing the nation alongside a guy called Stephen Powis from NHS England. In the strongest terms, condemning people for making a link between 5G and coronavirus. Today, the papers are full of stories about the need to get the tech giants to delete any posts or any claims that 5G is in any way responsible. It's as strong, as I said at the top of the program, it's as strong a reaction as I've seen in some years against a so-called conspiracy theory. Could there be any truth in it? Well, you see, I've been doing this program a long time. This particular program has been on air now for over 5 years. Before that, I was doing it in London. And before that, I was doing it in Spain. So I want to read you a little bit from a paper that was published in September of 2017. And this is very important. Scientists and doctors warn of potential serious health effects of 5G. Scientists and doctors warn of potential serious health effects of 5G. This was a collaboration of nearly 200 scientists and doctors. And I have to reiterate this is very important. Not homeopaths or chiropractors. I have a lot of time for homeopathy, by the way, as it happens. But I'm thinking now from the system point of view, right? Your friends and neighbours, they like to dismiss stuff. Oh, I bet you they're all cracks. No, they're not quacks. The 200 scientists and doctors from 36 countries who said we need to stop rolling out 5G, we need a moratorium, are all from some of the biggest universities in the world. They are establishment scientists. Back in 2017, nearly 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, they said, stop it, don't roll it out. 5G will substantially increase exposure to radio frequency electromagnetic fields, or RF-EMF, on top of the 2G, 3G, 4G Wi-Fi systems already in place, said the scientist at the time. RF-EMF has been proven to be harmful for humans and the environment. They went on to say that what 5G is doing is massively increasing mandatory exposure to wireless radiation. In other words, you can't get away from it. Because it's effective only over short distances. It's poorly transmitted through solid material. Therefore, you need lots and lots and lots and lots of antennas to roll it out. And antennas every 10 to 12 houses in urban areas, massively increasing the mandatory exposure. They were warning about this in 2017. System scientists, they said human health exposure, human health ramifications of exposure to this potentially deadly, because you're going to have antennas, so many of them, that you'll need one basically for every 10 to 12 houses. Okay? Nobody can avoid being exposed to it, they said at the time. 10 to 12 billion connections. Imagine it. And they said that will cause a substantial increase in the total long-term RF-EMF exposure to all citizens of the world. Over 230 scientists from more than 40 countries have expressed their serious concerns regarding the ubiquitous and increasing exposure to EMF generated by electric and wireless devices already before the additional 5G rollout. Imagine. EMF affects living organisms at levels well below most international and national guidelines. And the effects of EMF on the human body, proven, include increased cancer risk, wait for it, cellular stress, increase in harm-free radicals, genetic damages, structural and functional changes of the reproductive system, learning and memory deficits, neurological disorders, and negative impacts on general well-being in humans. Negative impacts on general well-being in humans. Damage, said the 200 plus scientists, goes well beyond humans, as there is growing evidence of harmful effects to both plants and animals. This is 2017. Not a single television channel in the UK or Ireland or the United States picked up the phone to the authors of that study and said, come on the air and tell us more. So you've got the governments today strongly condemning people linking 5G to this mystery virus described by Cameron Kyle Seidel. It's a nonsense. It's preposterous. It's dangerous. It has to be stopped. We should not allow anybody to make the claim that 5G is related. Now, do you know, Richie, Alan, Big Baldy Gammon, Noel, do you know that 5G is causing... Of course I don't. Of course I don't know that 5G is causing this. But I don't know that it isn't. Because some of the sharpest minds in studying non-ionising radiation have said cancer risk, cellular stress, increase in harmful free radicals, genetic damages, structural and functional changes of the reproductive system, learning, memory deficits, neurological disorders. And they said that was before 5G. That was before you can't get away from it. Because there is a transmitter needed for every few houses. So I can't say, and I never have done, and I never will, because I fancy myself as a responsible and ethical broadcaster. I can't say it is the 5G, but I certainly can't say it isn't. Right? Who's the preeminent man? Well, he's Professor Chris Busby. I'm not going to waste time giving you Chris Busby's resume. He's a genius. Look him up. I've gotten to befriend him and he's been on my programme a few times. Here's Chris Busby speaking to me last year on non-ionising radiation, 3G, 4G, 5G, and, well, what it means for us, Professor Chris Busby.
I mean, no state organisation or business organisation or anybody has actually addressed this problem. There are no environmental risk assessments at all. The ICNIRP understanding of risk is based on the heating of a bag of water. Now, people are not bags of water. People have living systems are extremely complicated and sophisticated, and they have all sorts of very, very sensitive tissues and organs inside them, which react in quite different ways to these kinds of energies to the way in which a bag of water does. What we have here is the same sort of thing that we've all come to realize yeah. exists, which is that the government is advised by physicists who have connections with industry, and in fact all universities now have connections with industry. And if anybody gets, I mean, I can get away with this sort of stuff because I don't have any job. No university can say anything to me. I can more or less say what I feel is right. But if you're a scientist working in industry, if you're somebody working in a university, you're not going to get any research grants if you start coming out and saying this stuff is dangerous or might be dangerous. Never mind about is dangerous. I'm saying it is dangerous. But the point is that the government cannot show, or the ICNIRP cannot show, that it's not dangerous. Now, in a situation where we have the European Union saying that there is such a thing as a precautionary principle, I mean, this is encapsulated in European law, it seems absolutely outrageous to me that they can trot out something that hasn't had a proper environmental impact assessment by independent scientists. But of course, the point is that there's lots of money on it. Now, there's huge and huge amount of money riding on the development of this technology.
There is. ICNIRP. governments are advised by the International Commission on Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection. The International Commission on Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection, ICNIRP, provides scientific advice and guidance to the government. It's funded in part by the big tech companies that are rolling out 5G. 200 scientists, eminent scientists from some of the world's most famous universities, said this technology can fucking kill you. But you never hear any of those people on the telly. Let's finish with Chris Busby.
It is a terrifying public health hazard, and it's completely ignored. The thing is that this sort of gung-ho idea that we're going to have the internet of everything and everything's going to be connected and how great it all is and so forth is going to destroy people. In fact, you know, if we go with the studies that show these fertility problems associated with, you know, reasonably high exposures to this stuff, we're not going to have to worry about global warming, Richie, because there won't be any people. There'll be no babies.
That was Sunday View. Goodbye. Have a great day. See you tomorrow. Bye now.